These stories are millennia old. They're from a culture that's very different to our own, and it's been sobering to notice that neither human nature nor the nature of God and what he asks of us has changed. And perhaps that's comforting to us in a world where we often feel that things are perpetually in flux. Those things seem to stay the same. And what's certainly always true is that we live in a world where interpersonal conflict and wider conflict is our experience as human beings. God's word tells us that even from the very early pages of Genesis, when we see Cain and Abel in conflict. The result of the fall, the result of sin coming into the world, the result of human beings choosing to not live by God's rules means that there is always conflict in our lives, or the potential for it. It's not that we necessarily go seeking it, but it comes to our door so often. And this story can help us to think about some of the ways that we might respond when conflict comes to our door. Today's story reads almost like a parable at times. And it's wedged between two different stories of conflict. So I've preached this passage completely out of order for the run of the story of David, and apologise for that. This is much more earlier. This passage is much earlier in the whole story of David. So the stories that we've been looking at recently come when he is king, when he's established on the throne. This comes from the part of the story where David is in conflict with Saul. He's on the run from Saul, and he's not yet been anointed king. So he's not king at this point. And this story actually comes between the two stories where he's in direct conflict with Saul. One that we looked at together, if you remember way back when, where he had the opportunity in his tent to do him in. And there's one as well where he's in a cave with him and he has the opportunity to harm him there. And right between those two stories of conflict, where David comes out really well because he avoids conflict with Saul, is this story where he is not quite so conflict avoidant. Those stories of Saul and David stand in contrast to this story today, which could be summarized as the tale of a fool, a hot-headed leader, and a wise peacemaker. The story opens introducing the fool, a man called Nabal, whose name, we later find out, actually means fool. In this story, he lives up to his name. Nabal may be a fool, but he is not like the one in the picture. Nabal was a very rich fool with extensive flocks and lands, and his foolishness comes from his character. He is mean and surly, attitudes which play out in the story. Now, Nabal lives with his wife, Abigail, in Carmel, the place where Saul dishonoured God and Samuel by worshipping before Samuel had arrived. That was Saul's downfall. And he later erected a statue to himself there. So this is very much in the story of conflict between Saul and David. This is Saul country. And at this point, as I've said, David is on the run from Saul, repeatedly trying to kill him. And we're told that it is sheep shearing season, a time of harvest, a time when the hard work of sheep shearing was over, people celebrated and they shared generously the fruits of their labours, even to strangers and the poor as they passed through. David, on the run from Saul with his band of men, camp near Nabal's shepherds and provide protection for them in the days of the sheep shearing. They're a help to the servants and a positive presence. And as the season ends, David asks the servants to ask Nabal if they can be recompensed for their service. This was a usual, reasonable, and culturally appropriate request, which according to the law of Moses should have been met with kindness and generosity. Now, as we heard read, Nabal's response was far from this. Nabal insultingly questions who David is, even though he was very well known, and implies that David is just a rebellious servant fleeing his master. Nabal was very much Team Saul. This rejection is relayed to David, who rather lets himself down in his response. Instead of moving on from the offence caused by Nabal's response, it incites David to get his men to tool up with their swords and confront Nabal himself, instead intent on harming him and his household. Now, luckily, one of his servants is wise, and he tells Abigail, Nabal's beautiful and intelligent wife, of the threat to the household posed by David and his men. You can almost hear the exasperation in Abigail, and certainly the desperation of the servant who has lived for many years with Nabal's unreasonable and nasty behavior. Abigail springs into action, the epitome of the Proverbs 31 woman. She takes the decision to not argue with her husband, but rather of her own accord to seek to resolve the conflict. She gathers a very generous amount of food and drink for David and his men and sends them ahead of her on donkeys. The donkeys, with Abigail behind them, meet the sword-wielding party of David and his men on the way to Nabal's house. Abigail gets off the donkey, prostrates herself before David, greeting him with humility and blessing. She recognizes him for who he is and who he will become and prophesies over him. Her actions quell David's anger, and he puts down his weapons and accepts her apology for Nabal's behavior and generosity. And with this, he heads on his way. Abigail returns home, having averted disaster, to find her husband getting drunk. Making another wise decision, she avoids telling Nabal about her actions and waits until morning to tell him what she has done. Instead of being met by thanks or even anger, Abigail's actions provoke some sort of heart incident, stroke, heart attack in Nabal. Perhaps he's shamed by his wife saving the situation or incensed at her generosity. And 10 days later, Nabal dies at God's hand. David hears of Nabal's death and asks Abigail to marry him, taking her to be his third wife. So, what can we learn from these three characters? I wonder which of them you relate to. Perhaps I wonder whether each of us have some of each of them in ourselves. Some in our better moments and others at our worst. Of course, we'd all like to think that we were never like Nabal, the villain of the story. But we are all capable of pride, a lack of generosity, and an unwillingness to listen to the counsel of others. Perhaps we have Nabals in our lives, or have done in the past, in our homes or workplaces, schools or wider life. Nabal's problem is more than anything else was his attitude towards his wealth. And his wealth and towards other people. And that led him to breaking God's law, which taught hospitality and generosity. Nabal thought his wealth was his own, an easy mistake for all of us, when actually whatever resources we have, great or small, we have them, but they belong to God. God has been generous to us, and in return, he expects us to honor him with generosity to himself and to others in return. What of David? If we'd studied this story in order, then the difference in his actions and character in this story would have struck us even more clearly. But we already know that the scales have rather fallen from our eyes when it comes to David. But at this point, it's one of the first times that we see that, like Saul, David too could be impulsive and hot-headed. I would like to say that this was part of his youth, but we've just learnt that later stories might suggest that this was an aspect of his character that he never really grew out of. Whereas in later stories, David's impulsivity led to lust and pride, here it leads to anger. Of course, none of us have ever been offended by someone's behaviour. Albeit, we may not have sought a confrontation with the other person with 300 sword-wielding friends. It's sobering to notice the speed at which David moves from offence to annoyance to anger to murderous intent. If David's actions had been carried through, he would have been able to be found guilty of murder, not manslaughter, in a court of law. He intended to kill. Jesus teaches us in the Sermon on the Mount that murder begins with thinking ill of others. And here we see how that is really played out. What of Abigail, our beautiful, clever, capable, and wise heroine? May we all of us here, men and women alike, be more Abigail. May we be blessed to have Abigails in our homes, our workplaces, schools, our church, and our wider community. Jesus, again, in the Sermon on the Mount, talked, "Blessed are the peacemakers." And that is what Abigail was. She knew how to keep the peace in her home when it was needed, and she knew how to make peace outside of it when conflict arose. I wonder whether this was the first time that she had to defuse such a situation. Perhaps we're reading the actions of a woman who had learned from previous mistakes. Maybe in her younger days, she tried to reason or argue with her husband, asked his permission to act on his behalf. It's hard to imagine there had not been times where she had been on the receiving end of his meanness and cruelty. Yet this experience had not impacted her character. She maintained her own obedience to God's law and a commitment to generosity and hospitality. To misquote Michelle Obama, when they went low, she went high. Abigail embodies Jesus's teaching to love our enemies, proving that whilst it can seem like a dangerous strategy, it can in fact bring life-changing results. Rather than wait for a disaster to befall for her household, she took responsibility for her husband's actions, even though she didn't have to, and he certainly didn't deserve it. She met the anger, hatred, and violence of David with humility, love, and blessing. Now, it's easy to put her on a pedestal and just admire her actions without stopping to consider the cost of her actions. As a rich, clever, beautiful woman, she had to humble herself, physically making herself subservient to an angry young man, blessing him and calling out the best in him instead of telling him to get a grip and put down the sword. I wonder whether you have ever approached impending conflict in this way. It can be powerful and effective, just as it is in this story. Finally, what of God? Where is God in this story of human emotion and action? Perhaps he is behind the action, setting the scene and creating the boundaries within which it plays out. God had given his law. Generosity and hospitality are expected of people. But he allows attitudes like Nabal's within human hearts. He does not dictate that we are not mean and horrible to others. Neither does he strike us down when we are. Often, like in this story, he allows it to play out in our lives. Some who find themselves isolated from family and friends later in life were once Nabal's. With many chances to make amends and build bridges, but stuck in patterns of behaviour which alienate others. Here it's sobering to read that God didn't stay his hand forever. Nabal could well have recovered that morning, but God's judgment on his disobedience led to his death. God also allows us to get angry. In fact, he created us with the ability to experience and act upon us. God created all of our emotions. Anger, of course, can be used for good, an engine for fighting injustice, but it can also be extremely damaging. In our story, Abigail prevents David from committing a murder that would have marred his life. And our prisons are full of women and men who had no Abigail in their lives at their point of need. God's law and teaching will have also formed Abigail's character as she cooperated with it, using her capabilities to create a space to listen to others, listening to others in her household. She was the person that the servants came to. And she used her resources to respond to God's invitation to be a peacemaker in the face of conflict. This story can also be read as a metaphor for Jesus' actions towards us. Paul writes in Ephesians 2 about how Christ himself, dying on the cross, has made a way for us not only to be reconciled to God, but to each other. And in 2 Corinthians 5, he writes again about how the reconciliation between us and God and us and others is made possible through Jesus' sacrifice on the cross. Like Abigail, Jesus took on the sin of others, not his own sin. He humbled himself and in the ultimate act of generosity, gave not gifts on donkeys, but his very life to enable peace. We remember this generosity at the communion table. And we are invited again to both search ourselves for traces of Nabal or David in us and to receive forgiveness for our sins. And we commit ourselves to following Jesus, embodying peacemaking in the face of conflict, just as Abigail did.